I knew just looking at it before I could even hear sounds, just looking at the score, that it was going to be something special. Yeah, this wasn't just a student composition,
right, so to speak.
This was a real piece of work.
Yes.
And one that I actually recently had to write about this piece for her. And I thought it's more than just... A really cool piece. It's something that I think is going to be really meaningful to the repertoire.
Oh, hello and welcome to Journeys at Maxa podcast. I'm happy to be here today with Dr. Nicholas Counselor and also Clarissa De La Garza, who was on an earlier show. She's returning to talk a little bit more about some of her projects. I'm going to get started by first introducing Dr. Counselor here, who's officially said I can call him Nick, so that means we're like buds now, so that's a good thing. So Dr. Counselor is Assistant Professor of Practice at the University of Texas at San Antonio, where he teaches applied clarinet, woodwind methods, and directs the clarinet choir. He previously held teaching positions at Texas A&M University Kingsville and the University of Texas at Austin. He also maintains a large private studio in Austin and San Antonio, where his students frequently make the TMEA All-State Ensembles and earn top accolades in solo competitions. As a clinician for the Diodaro Woodwind Method Program, Dr. Counselor has taught nearly 100 clinics to students of all ages throughout Texas. He has a BME from Eastern Michigan University, an MM from the University of Texas at Austin, and a DMA from the University of Texas at Austin. He's also a member of the San Antonio Philharmonic, the Central Texas Philharmonic, and the Mid-Texas Symphony, and performs regularly with the Austin Symphony Orchestra and other regional orchestras across the state. He's also appeared as guest principal clarinetist with the San Antonio Symphony and the Dallas Winds. And there's lots more I could be saying, and we'll be getting into that soon. So welcome, Nick, to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And then we also have Clarissa De La Garza, and she was on, I think it was episode 2, a really, really fun episode. I think you're trying to remember episode.
Yeah.
I think it was episode 2. You'll have to check. Check the channel and subscribe, people. Okay. All right. It was a really, really fascinating interview with lots of exposure and exploration of all the repertoire she's been writing. But I want to give a little bit of an anchor in her background as well. So Clarissa grew up in Mission, Texas. She began her private clarinet studies under Dr. Bill O'Neill at the University of Texas Pan American at the age of 13. She graduated magna cum laude with a bachelor's degree in music performance from the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley in 2017, and graduated with a master's degree in clarinet performance from the University of Texas at San Antonio in 2024. She currently teaches here at Musical Arts Center of San Antonio, woohoo, as a clarinet and piano instructor. In 2016, she was the winner of UTRGV's annual concerto competition for her performance of Weber's Concertino in E-flat major, opus 26. And in 2022, she was the winner of UTSA's annual concerto competition for her performance of Debussy's Première Rhapsody. You can find her work self-published on cdelagarzamusic.com, and it's also available through Camco Music LLC at clarinetallmusic.com. Clarissa, I'm so glad you're back with us today.
Thanks.
We had talked about this a little bit in the last show, that this was coming, this performance is coming at the International Clarinet, I guess it's the International Clarinet Association's Clarinet Fest this coming summer. And I was like, it would be so cool if we could get Nick Counselor here on the show to talk about that. So here he is. It's actually happening, everyone. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit at the end, and also looking at some of the previews of what that's going to be like. But for starters, I want to talk about, Nick, your journey in music. And I like to go back to when you started. Like, how old were you when you started music lessons?
Oh, music lessons. Well, I started in sixth grade. I'm from sort of a rural town in Michigan. And when we start sixth grade, we had to choose between band or choir. And I chose band.
Okay.
And I actually started on the saxophone.
Oh,
well,
I see.
Okay. Actually, it was a little interesting. I got assigned to play the baritone first.
Ah,
we had to do the little instrument fittings when we were in fifth grade to decide which instrument. And I wanted to play the saxophone, and so I tried it and apparently was not very good at it. So we went to brass instruments after that. I could buzz my lips okay. And so I got assigned the baritone, and I went to the first week of band expecting to play the baritone. And then we had to select our instruments, and my mom said, "You want to play saxophone, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." So she bought me a saxophone instead and wrote a note to the band director and said, "I think Nick will play saxophone instead."
Okay, got it. So
that's what I did, and I played saxophone all the way through high school. And I entered college for music education as a saxophonist. And
really? Okay.
Sort of gradually made a switch to clarinet.
Okay, yeah. Now that's very interesting. So, I want to get into how that switch occurred.
Sure.
But I want to even go back a little bit further. Now, what was it? So something had anchored in your mind about the saxophone, I guess, right? Like, how did that happen? Like, how did that get into your mind?
Honestly, I was even much younger than that. I don't know how old I was, but at some point in my childhood, one of my aunts just on one of our vacation visits with her, randomly said, "I really love the saxophone. You should play the saxophone."
Oh,
and that just stuck with me, and it made an impression on me.
Wow.
I wasn't drawn to the saxophone through jazz music, like a lot of people who choose that instrument are. And really, it just when it came time, I was just dead set on choosing the saxophone. It was what I always thought I would play, and that's.
Have you ever spoken to this aunt about this choice again?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, totally did.
And then, what did she say? Like, how did that get into her?
I don't think she even remembered saying it, to be honest with you. So, yeah, it was quite interesting. But, yeah, that's really how it all started.
So this is fascinating. So we all need to be a little bit aware when we talk to children of a certain age that if we say something like, "You should be an Arctic explorer," or something like that, that may, like, they're like, "Yeah, that's what I should be that," you know. Now, that could be very cool. Obviously, it worked out very well for
you. Yeah, it did.
But that's so amazing how something, she had some feeling, and obviously you were open to it, and then it was so there that your mom knew about it as well. And even though the tides of the testing system was pointing in some other direction, you were like, "No, it's going to be saxophone."
Yeah.
And then somehow it changed.
Yeah.
Now that, so, because you stuck with it. I mean, that's a long time. I mean, I'm sure you still play now, but
sometimes,
in terms of your switch, like, do you remember, like, what made that change for you?
Yeah, it was, in high school, I started picking up other instruments.
Okay.
Actually, it probably started more in middle school, but in high school, I got more serious about it. I started playing a lot more for musicals. I remember, I think I was a sophomore in high school, and I got asked to play with the Pitt Orchestra with our school's production musical. And my band director gave me the book, and it was, I don't know, Reed 2, I think it was called. And I noticed it had clarinet in the book. And so I went up to my band director and said, "Oh, well, what do I do with this? Do I play this on the tenor saxophone in the same key? What do I do?" And he said, "No, you play clarinet." And I went, "Oh, okay, I guess I'll learn to do that real quick." So I did.
He's like, "You play clarinet."
I think he knew that he could push me a little bit in that direction, because that's not very typical, but I did. I went home and I practiced the clarinet quite a lot and made it, did an okay job with that, and I enjoyed it. And all the way through high school, I kind of learned to dabble a little bit in everything instrument-wise. And then I went to college at Eastern Michigan, and I was a music ed major. Mm-hmm. So my first year, we had to take some methods courses where we learned how to play and teach other instruments.
I
took the clarinet class with was eventually my teacher, Dr. Kimberly Cole Luevano.
Okay, fantastic.
And I just loved her. And I loved the class, and I loved getting a little bit more kind of formal teaching and experience in that instrument. And so at the end of that class, which was the end of my first year, I asked her if it would be possible for me to take lessons on the side on this instrument, maybe secondary. And she said, "Sure, I have room in my studio, so you're welcome to." And turns out she kind of treated me like a clarinet major almost right off at the beginning. Wow. I kind of remember my very first lesson. I thought it was just going to be for fun. I was just doing this to just get some more experience. And she gave me all this music. Here are scales and etudes and arpeggios and all these things. And said, "Make sure you practice all these." And I went, "Oh, what did I get myself into?" Right? So I was a good music student. I went and practiced, and I got pretty good, pretty fast, and I don't know, the rest is history. I guess you could say I took a liking to the instrument playing a different role in the wind ensembles, and then, of course, there's orchestra, which the saxophone didn't really get to participate in, and that was a whole other new world. And I did both for a little while, saxophone and clarinet, for a few years, taking lessons on both. And then at one point, my saxophone and clarinet teacher sat me down and said, we think you should probably focus on one. You'll never really know how good you'll get at it until you do.
Right.
And we think you should choose clarinet.
So. Oh, wow. Okay.
I was probably going to choose clarinet anyways, but the decision was in some ways made for me. And I kind of charged full throttle ahead and never looked back.
Wow. Okay. This is so interesting because in this case, you had sort of outside forces. One, the person who's doing the pit orchestra, the director of with the musical, basically sensing that you could do this other instrument, and basically not taking no for an answer. You know, and then you rose to the occasion. And then a sort of a similar experience when you're with your this class and educational class,
right, in
pedagogy. And then she doesn't just take it easy on you. She's like, yeah, no, you're doing this.
Yeah.
And they must have sensed that they could do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They must have sensed it.
For sure.
And then what I was imagining when you were talking about the two of them sitting you down, I was sort of imagining some sort of like duel that they were going to fight between the two instruments. You know, like whoever won, that's what you would do.
Sure.
But instead they made it a little bit easier on you and said do the clarinet instead.
Right.
Now I also it's interesting you touch on this a little bit too, that you know, having been in the saxophone world and then you're in the clarinet world, that there is a difference and people may not be aware of that. I mean they're both instruments, you know, that have some similarities. It's not like the I don't know what would be a good example of something that's completely different, but there's some similarities, but they're used very differently.
Sure.
And when you did get into the clarinet and you did get to orchestra roles and things like that, you said a new world opened up. So was that I'm assuming it was an attractive world.
Yeah.
Right, to you. And do you think you had not been exposed to that before just because you were in high school and not been in an orchestra at that level? Or like, what was it that...
Oh, we had no string program in my high school.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No orchestra in sight. Uh-huh. I think I saw a live symphony orchestra once when I was a high school student.
Oh, okay.
I actually saw the New York Philharmonic at one point. You know,
it
wasn't just a live... Yeah, no,
like,
sure.
Right,
I think I was much too young and naive to really appreciate it.
Right,
but it just wasn't a world that was something I could be exposed to when I was that age. And then I showed up to college and there was suddenly orchestras and orchestral instruments.
Right.
Yeah, totally different experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, amazing. Now, another question I want to ask is when you decided to go into music ed, what was it that like drew you to that, and did you consider anything else besides music ed before that decision?
I really didn't consider anything else,
okay,
to be honest.
Okay.
I kind of always knew. I mean, from the moment I kind of started with band, by the time I entered high school, I was just such a band geek best ways, basically.
It was
just my whole life, really. Mm-hmm. It was all I did. Mm-hmm. I did other activities in school, sure.
Right.
But
right.
My home was in the band hall, for sure. Mm-hmm. And when it came time to pick what we were going to do and go to college for, I just knew it was going to be band. I wanted to be my high school band director, really.
That's cool. That's amazing.
And that's what I always thought. And I liked performing. I was quite good. And I knew I would probably do that. But... Like most parents, I think when they hear their kid is going to go into music, you know, I was kind of cautioned to maybe keep my options open and make sure it's a little safer to go into music ed, perhaps than a performance track, you know, especially
True.
As a saxophone player at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no regrets doing that at all.
That's amazing. Okay, so there was something about, I mean, obviously it was a very, very good program and you had a great relationship with a band director.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what I like to kind of lean into a little bit on when we talk about these things is that the strong mentorship power that people that are doing a really good job and have a passion for teaching, how they can have such a great effect on the people that work with them, right?
Yeah.
And then whether they go into music or something else, there's so much that's learned from working in music together, I think, and it's when you said you wanted to be your high school band director. I mean, that's such a sweet and thing to say, you know. I'm sure what's the band director's name?
His name is Kent Bolton.
Kent Bolton. Yep. Okay, great. Is he still directing?
No, he retired just a couple years after I graduated, actually.
Okay, okay. So, have you stayed in touch? Does he know?
I have. Yeah, okay. He does know. He does.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm sure he's very
I haven't
proud.
Seen him in a few years, I know, but we stay in touch, you know, through the social media. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I think it's important. I mean, I'll tell you as a you know person who now has some alumni students myself, it's one of the great experiences of teaching to watch the students continue to develop, and I'm sure he's just delighted, you know, with everything you've
he
done.
He is, for sure.
So, now, that's a good transition into this other part of this topic I wanted to get into a little bit, which is that Clarissa studied with you for her master's degree. And so this is kind of a cool opportunity here for us. We have, in person, a person who had influence on another person that we've had on the show already. And And also, there's this collaborative relationship that I wanted to ask a little bit about. So for those that are tuning in, so Nick has commissioned multiple pieces from Clarissa for clarinet, and he's going to be performing the solo in Impressions at the International, well, the Clarinet Fest that's coming up. And but you commissioned several pieces, right? Like three or four, I think. Now isn't that right?
Yeah, I think we've done four clarinet choir pieces and things like that.
The
solo, yeah.
Okay, so like, what? I mean, I'm tempted to ask how she was as a student, but I know she was amazing as a student, and
she was.
Like, obviously, you know. But what? At what point did you be? Where did this sort of shift? Because I mean, here's a person. Of course, you've had lots of clarinet students, and you still do. But there must have been something, some moment where you're like, wow, maybe this could be more of an artistic collaboration. It, like, what did that start brewing in your mind when it came to all these commissions?
So, I mean, I think I knew right off the bat that you did some composing. I mean, that you had been composing even before you got to UTSA, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. And so I think at that point, what's the name of the piece? I think it's 9-9-13, right?
Oh,
okay. It was a piece you had written for your previous clarinet choir in your mm-hmm. undergrad, I think. And so I think it started with that. And then what was the next piece you wrote for us? It was one that you played. It was before Lost in Reverie, mm. right? Or no, Lost in Reverie was?
That was the next one, right?
Okay. So I think basically what started is I decided to take the UTSA Clarinet Choir to TMEA,
okay.
Here, the Texas Music Education Association, their convention, and we got accepted, and so I had to come up with a program in mind, and I immediately thought of Clarissa and said, hey, I liked your first piece, do you want to write us a second piece?
Uh-huh.
Or I guess it was really writing us a first piece,
officially. Right,
we had
right,
played
right.
this other
uh-huh.
piece,
right.
I think in the spring before that, and she immediately said yes, mm-hmm. I just like the idea of giving new and young composers mm-hmm. A platform
right,
to be able to
right,
have their music played.
Right.
I mean, there are lots of composers who write music that never get played at mm-hmm. all, and so mm-hmm. it was easy to do, and I think it's great. It's a perfect venue and opportunity to just expose the world to new voices and
right,
new compositions.
Absolutely.
And so she wrote it, and of course it was fantastic,
mm-hmm.
Enjoyable to listen to, enjoyable to work on and play.
Right.
I know the students really enjoyed playing mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And then right, she turned around and like a month later, I swear, like right after we played uh-huh. at the convention in February, it's like the beginning of March, and she goes, you know, I've already started writing another piece, and if you want, we could play that one at the end of the semester. And so we did. I think we did another concert in April, and
wow.
and I let her conduct that one because mm-hmm. I said, you know, I think I've done enough. How about you?
Yeah,
you conduct this one for sure, and uh-huh. then... I'm always looking for more opportunities for my students, so I decided to take the clarinet choir to ICA this next summer. Which was, I had to apply for that.
Right.
Almost right after the second premiere.
Okay.
And so I immediately asked her if she would mm-hmm. write us another piece mm-hmm. right off the bat. And,
amazing.
And the rest is history.
Okay,
we are.
That's amazing. So, one of the things that I really enjoyed, I mean, when I was looking at the pieces before the other podcast we did, was that in the pieces that she did for the clarinet choir, that mm-hmm. all the parts of the choir, they're very individualized,
yeah.
and everybody's doing something very I think challenging, and I think they're not only fascinating pieces to listen to, but they're very good pedagogically, I would imagine, also very
yeah.
good for like sharpening an ensemble, I would think.
Yeah.
I know we sort of touched on this before with your writing, but I just thought that was so clever and so important. Also with the Eventide Sonata, the one for the beginning students. I mean, yeah. I just that's so hard to do to write so well and pedagogically as well. So anyway, so bravo for doing all that and that's wonderful that you have that in your heart to promote, you know, the work of emerging composers.
Yeah.
And all that. Now, the piece that you're going to be premiering, I mean, there's several that you're going to be performing at the Clarinet Conference, mm-hmm. Clarinet Fest. And the one that, in particular, Impressions, I would say that's definitely not a beginner piece.
That's most certainly far, not.
That's kind of the opposite of beginner. And we will take a look at that in a few minutes. But we also have this four-movement piece for Issa. And there's another one as well, I think, that you're doing at the Clarinet Fest. Is that right? There's a third piece.
There's a high school ensemble that's going to be playing another piece of mine.
Okay. Okay.
Cedar Park High School.
Oh, really?
Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
In Song and Spirit.
Okay.
Where are they based out of?
Cedar Park.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I meant.
It's just outside of Austin.
Yes. I meant like statewide. Anyway, but you're right. I got you now. Yes. And how do they find your work?
I don't know.
Okay.
He just bought the piece from my website. And
really?
Said, I'm going to submit it for ICA, and I was like, okay.
That's
it.
Okay, that's really really cool. Okay.
Yeah, the director.
So this website thing is working very well. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Okay. And are they going to do a clinic with you at all, or with that, or is it?
They invited me to go rehearse with the kids next month, so okay. I'm going to find some time to go out there.
That's
going to
be so cool. That's going to be amazing. Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing experience. Let's switch into the gear a little bit of talking about these pieces that you have coming up. I did want to read real quick a little bit about the theme of this upcoming Clarinet Fest here. The theme for 2025 is Transcending Traditions, and it explains, while celebrating the storied legacy of the clarinet, the membership is encouraged to also explore beyond the traditional mainstream to showcase clinics and performances that reflect a wider view of the instrument's journey within our connected world and allow our community to discover new avenues of expression, which sounds super, super, super cool. I think you've definitely done that. And did you know that this was the theme before?
Yeah.
You did. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because you knew that, and then did you write like the Impressions piece? Like, did you know this was the theme before you started writing that, or were you already working on the concept for Impressions?
Yeah. No. So Impressions, I had like only partially done back when I was still working on my graduate studies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was actually, Dr. Counselor had mentioned the idea of performing the piece there at Clarinet Fest, and he said, hey, do you have an electronic version? And I was like, actually, I do.
Oh, really? Okay, how did that come about?
That gave me an excuse to finish it, because it had just been sitting there for so long.
So it had been like in your mind, like, or mm-hmm. partially written. And of course, the version that you performed at your graduate recital was with the two piano drums version.
Yeah.
And then, but it was interesting that when you played a sample, and of course we'll listen to this in a sample in a few minutes, but the expansion of the piece in the electronic version is quite dramatic. I mean, it's the same piece, but it's almost not exactly a transcription, but it's a recomposition in some ways. How do you feel? I mean, I'm saying this not being the one who wrote it, but like, what is your view of the two versions?
I think it's a lot more freeing, not having to be limited to three players. Mm-hmm. You know, I could put as many parts as I want, mm-hmm. and things like mm-hmm. that, effects, and just the instruments that were available mm-hmm. to me were, I mean, it could be anything.
It's limitless.
Yeah, it was limitless. Yeah. And so yeah. I really enjoyed playing around with that mm-hmm. quite a bit. And really, I think it's just a lot more accessible of a piece to not have to worry about rehearsal schedules.
Well, that's true. Right.
How do you get two pianos on the stage mm-hmm. and having mm-hmm. a drummer transport their instrument? You know,
right.
It's just,
right.
it's a lot more accessible.
Right.
So
right.
that was a big part of it too.
And what about like for you for performing this? I know it's, you have the chops to do it, but it's also, it's a very different piece, and also playing with an electronic, basically it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's a track, right? It's a pre-played track.
Correct.
That you're playing with. I mean, what is that experience been like to kind of prepare for the performance?
So, I mean, I thought of this piece immediately when the ICA invited me to do a solo recital for this. I thought a little bit about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to play, and keeping in mind the transcending traditions, I was really trying to figure out, you know, if playing for a conference full of professional clarinet players can be kind of intimidating.
Tremendous.
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, at this point, it's almost like everything's been done before. So I was immediately trying to think of what can I do that's new, that's going to help stand out. And, of course, I thought of Clarissa's bass clarinet piece. I decided I wanted to do a bass clarinet recital.
Okay.
At the time, most of my professional performance was on the bass clarinet anyways.
Oh,
so
okay.
I kind of wanted to feature that. Mm-hmm. I have been long a fan of this piece from when it was... in its early conceptions, I asked her, "Hey, I'd like to play this piece." I knew there was no way I was going to be able to find two pianists and a drummer to go up there do that. So I asked if there was any, you know, a way that she could probably make this happen. I knew I had thought there was some talk underways that you were already in the mix of doing this. So I kind of thought, okay, sure, let me just see where it's at. And she said, yes, you know, let me finish that real quick for you. And she did. I swear it was probably like the next week it was probably done, you know.
How do you do
wild
stuff?
Like this. And I was like, well, hold on. This is next summer. I probably am not going to get to this for a little while, right?
I
think it's really cool. I thought that, I mean, I knew just looking at it before I could even hear sounds, just looking at the score, that it was going to be something special.
Yeah,
this wasn't just a student composition,
so to speak.
This was a real piece of work.
Yes.
And one that I actually recently had to write about this piece for her. And I thought it's more than just... A really cool piece. It was it's something that I think is going to be really meaningful to the repertoire.
Oh, I think so. End. It seems very groundbreaking to me.
Very. Yeah. And in numerous ways. I mean, the original acoustic version, groundbreaking just because of how it works, the instrumentation of it all. But when you really hear about her inspirations with various... I want to say heavy metal, inspirations and of different kinds and the sort of story behind that she's telling in this, it takes on even more meaning than just it sounds very cool.
Right,
and it does sound very cool.
Right.
So I do want to say that. And it is not very typical to play with a lot of electronic track. I mean, certainly this is not the first piece that's played, you know, for any instrument in electronic tracks.
Right.
But I do think this is probably going to be one of the first, if not, you know, the first that emulates the, I want to say, solo guitar playing that this does.
The shredding kind of
absolutely,
thing.
In that way. So I'm super excited.
Are you going to like bust your clarinet to pieces on the stage at the end?
Way too expensive to do that.
Okay,
and I sometimes take issue when I see others do that often be no, that was a good instrument. But, you know.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to touch on something.
Sure, I hear you. Maybe I'll break a reed at the end of
You can do that.
Absolutely.
You can do that. Something like, if you're dramatic enough, you know.
Sure.
You know, we've talked about, we have to hear a little bit of this. This is so cool. So I'm going to have you, Clarissa, do the honors here of locating this. The right spot, I think so. And this way that people can get just a little taste of what this is gonna be like.
I go about halfway?
Sure, whatever. I think one of the critical things though there's several critical things. So your description of the piece is very, very, very interesting in terms of the subconsciousness and the struggle. And then I think you said the third section or something, then like the clarinet then takes over in a sense, like it's like they have a realization and a healing. It's quite fascinating, the description. But let's hear it.
From that area. I think it's around 4:45.
Is that the area where what I was just describing is happening, or what? Why don't you just you set it up?
You set it up.
I feel like we're doing this is like watching a movie or something. And you're going to set up the scene.
I'm trying 4:45. Let's see.
Okay. Thank you.
she wanted to.
Well, it sounds pretty cool. Anything else you want to show?
That was the moment you were talking about.
Okay, cool. Now, thank you so much. And there's a lot more, and it's really, really, really cool. But I mean, already you can hear there's a lot of, I can hear the guitar influences and all that. The shredding. So I'm a little curious, what do you think the reaction's going to be at the conference? And are you keeping this sort of under wraps a little bit, or we're giving it away?
No, right? I will absolutely be telling people that they should show up to this for sure. Uh-huh. I think people are going to love it. I don't think they're expecting this at all.
Right.
And I definitely think this is going to transcend transitions. Traditions for sure. And I just think it's just going to kind of, you know, bring the house down.
That's the feeling I was getting.
I'm hoping to blow the roof off, you know,
right? Totally. Yeah. Because I don't know. I mean, that much about heavy. As a matter of fact, I've learned about the heavy metal from reading your description.
Oh, really?
I mean, of course, I have heard it before, but the fact that, like, in a sense, it was good exposure for me to heavy metal structure to get into your piece, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And maybe for other people, they're getting exposed to clarinet if they're more familiar with heavy metal. But it's one of the cool things about bringing together all these different genres is that we have our way in, right? We have our way in, and then we're like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. I didn't know about that. And now I'm curious about some of these other things, you know? So it's going to be very, very powerful. I'm a little bit curious, like, what is it like? I don't mean to make y'all uncomfortable asking this question, but what's it like to have your teacher playing your piece and you're the composer? And normally when we're playing a piece with the composer, we're like, you know, the composer, you know, we're trying to do everything the composer wishes. But when you're a student, you're trying to do the things that your teacher wishes, and now your teacher is playing your piece. Do you understand what I'm saying? What does that feel like?
I think it's super cool. I mean, I would rather other people play my music than me and myself play my music.
Okay,
and it's like, it sounds silly as someone with a performance degree to say things like that, but I'd much rather enjoy just hearing what others do with it, and if they make the piece their own in that way and interpret things how they want.
Well, it must be, I mean, because what I'm guessing is you're probably finding that when people come in from a different perspective, they're probably finding other things in the piece that are hidden in a way. It came from your consciousness and your subconsciousness, and there's patterns in there, and there's things in there that probably that... your subconscious knows they're there, but you may not be thinking of it. And then when a new performer comes in, they may be finding some of those patterns, and you may be finding new expressions in there or something like that.
Yeah, like I was actually kind of fighting myself with putting the program notes or not, just because I was kind of really curious what other people would hear in it.
True.
I don't know if they could plug their own vision or story or imagination in there.
That's a good. Yeah, because your program notes are very, very good for all of the pieces. What would be really interesting is if they heard it once without the program notes and then heard it again with the program notes, probably something like that. But I don't know if that's
really intrigued by that idea, because I don't like the idea of telling people what to listen for.
Right.
But I know people also like to know how the pieces are constructed, and so in the end, I just put it in there.
Yeah. It may be that they need, like, in a sense, when we're performing or we're writing, we are so in the world of that music that, we know it so well, right? It's become part of us, right? It was part of you, and you brought it forth. And maybe for an audience who's, you know, probably, you know, maybe rushed there in traffic or whatever, and they just may need something to center themselves before they can receive it, perhaps. It's going to be awesome. So let's go ahead and let me see if there's anything else I wanted to ask. Oh, well, let's talk about your other commission, the For Isa, which the Finnish poet died at 19. And this was commissioned, you just finished this, I believe, right? And is it going to be premiered at the conference?
Kahden miel en mä voi noudatella, olla ääneti ja lauleskella. Voiko ilman tarkoitusta luoja hienot sävelet mun sydämeen? Eipä niin, vaan kaikkein lahjan tuoja vaatii arvo niistä itselleen. Sulle, Herra, lauluni jos soisi, silloin suotu, sallittu se olisi. vuodattaapi kauniin kultakasteensa. Mitä kuiskaa toivon ääni sydämeeni sykkivään, et en koko elämääni ole luotu itkemään. Koska lemmen tulta sielus kätkee. Laula silloinkin, ystäväs, kun elomyrskyt sulta vie. Oi, laula silloin lyydin.
So what was that process like? When did you first, and did you help her choose the subject?
Not at
or
all.
Or did you just say, write something?
Yeah.
Yeah, significant, write something significant.
For and sure.
then, okay.
Yeah,
and then
you just told me a little what the theme is for mm-hmm. the transcendent traditions.
Okay,
and
okay.
I was like, okay, I can come up yeah. with a couple of, I think I came up with like three different concepts and I okay. sent them to you and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I kind of like the idea of the poetry one. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. Then it just went from there.
Mm-hmm.
That it was like probably the most challenging piece I've ever written because it actually had a plan, and most of the things I write don't have a plan.
Okay.
So that actually made it harder. But
wait, back up for a second. Okay, so wait, when you say they don't have a plan, like you just like don't have a program in a way, or like say a little more about that.
I guess they just the pieces just kind of happen. I don't
okay,
know, like,
okay.
It's just whatever I'm feeling at the time. That's why they're
okay.
so different.
Okay.
But this one, I was like, okay, I actually have something I'm writing for.
I see.
It's for this event.
Mm-hmm.
It's themed this way. It's for
I
this
see.
Group.
Okay.
The other mm-hmm. pieces I've written were just, mm-hmm. they were just whatever. Well, not,
okay.
not whatever pieces, but they also got a lot of care, but this one mm-hmm. got like extra care,
mm-hmm.
I guess. It was
yeah.
just struggling. I've never written a piece that's multi-movement to this extent.
Right.
This length before,
mm-hmm.
so it's just different. The instrumentation's
mm-hmm.
more extensive.
Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
even among the parts, there's like split parts among them. So
right,
yeah,
right. So it's very complex. So then, mm-hmm. to absorb the poetry, and then convey the poetry, which I think you did beautifully.
Thank
I
you.
Mean the poems are. I mean, I've read them a couple of times, and then you know definitely the I mean the pieces. They connect very, very well. What was it? I mean, how does it feel to having now completed that? And what are you looking forward to and hoping that the audience will take away from hearing this?
That's a tough one. I don't know how the audience is going to take this one
because
it just tonally, aesthetically, it's so
mm-hmm.
different from anything that I've made before.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones I've made are like fun and quirky, and, you know, exciting, and this
mm-hmm.
one's just very like unsatisfying. And it's purposefully that.
Right.
It's very, there's parts in it that are just very ugly,
mm-hmm.
Upsetting, and
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't feel resolved at all in
mm-hmm.
any way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just how the works are.
Right.
And so it's a tragic story.
It is.
And
yeah.
so I tried to make a tragic piece, but also have it be artistically representative of what the text was trying
mm-hmm.
to say,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
I can see that. I mean, in a way, the I mean, she died so young at 19, and it's quite remarkable that she had so much to give in that short life. And even in the last poem she's talking about, I think that was one of the last poems she wrote, right? Mm-hmm. And she's talking about her impending death, which is very, it was intense to read. But I could see that basically there's a sense of something not finished, is what you're saying, right? A sense of mm-hmm. something not finished in the work itself. It sounds to me like something that's probably going to be the kind of thing you'd want to listen to many times. I'm suggesting that to the audience.
I hope so.
Hopefully. Yeah.
There are so many little tiny things that I think can be missed on just one mm-hmm. listen. Mm-hmm. But thematically, it was made very, very carefully.
Yeah, I'm sure. A very intense experience. How was it like going with the two different translations? Like, I mean, I'm not a Finnish expert. Maybe you are, but I mean, like, to just how did you like find a good translation? And
it was super hard. So mm-hmm. like initially, I was just kind of dabbling with AI to get like the general gist mm-hmm. of it. But I was like, I need to know
deep.
The nuances of like what each word. So I actually hired somebody.
Did you?
Yeah, hired someone on Fiverr to translate.
Really?
And she's the one that recorded the
Oh, she's the one that did that. She mm-hmm. the narration. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was really happy for that, and mm-hmm. she gave me the rights to distribute and all that. So everything was legit.
Right. Right.
But yeah, so that's how I did that, and mm-hmm. I got a more accurate English mm-hmm. translation for that.
And it must because that's. That's a whole other level too, because you have to have, in a sense, be able to really absorb the, not only the poetry, and poetry can be, challenging even if it's in your native tongue, but then for it to be translated on top of that, and then to transform that into something musical. That's really quite extraordinary. And I would imagine it feels pretty good to be done with that.
Yeah. It took me like 6 months, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, did you write anything else in the meantime?
No.
You just totally focused on that.
I've been doing that since like October.
You've been living in Finnish poetry in your mind, in a sense, this whole time. Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And were you like kind of freaked out when you started to think about this, like in a way, or like...
Like what, in what way?
Well, I mean, just like, oh, wow. Like it's sort of like you had a sense that you had something big to give here, and then like, whew, now I have to come up with this. Do you know what I mean? Did it kind of like gradually,
I feel like I had a lot of pressure on this. Mm-hmm. I put pressure on myself. I've never written for an actual person before. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I was burdened with that responsibility of like, you have to be respectful to this person. You have to be like genuine to what the vision mm-hmm. was.
You're talking about Issa herself,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, yes, right.
There's just like this whole different level of like empathy you need to have for mm-hmm. this person you've never met.
Right.
And it's, so that's why I was just navigating it very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. So it was honestly pretty exhausting. But I was pretty happy with how it came out mm-hmm. in the end. I think it achieved what I wanted it to mm-hmm. achieve.
Now, in the process of the 6 months, were you sharing any of this with Nick as well?
Along the way, a little bit, I think, here and there. Not like a lot. Or mm-hmm. I don't remember.
I got periodic updates,
like
for sure.
Updates.
Remember when the concept of the narration came in? She kind of texted me and said, "Hey, how possible do you think it would be to like have a narration along with this?" And I went, "Sure, we can make it happen. Sounds good. Okay, one more thing,
Right. Did you guide her in terms of shaping it for the ensemble or anything?
I did not. Uh-huh. I mean, we had an initial conversation. When I asked her to mm-hmm. if she'd be willing to do this mm-hmm. for us, and with the theme in mind mm-hmm. of transcending traditions, I just said, "Look, I want you to feel like you can do anything. We'll make it happen." I said, and I threw out some suggestions mm-hmm. of just some of the maybe less typical things mm-hmm. that never happen for clarinet mm-hmm. choir that mm-hmm. she could consider mm-hmm. and things like that. But I just said, whatever you want to do, we'll make happen. So, she doesn't have to confine herself mm-hmm. in any way. She certainly didn't. I got a little bit of updates along the way, but mm-hmm. really it was kind of like seemed like an organic process mm-hmm. for you. And mm-hmm. and next thing I know, I have a finished product.
Wow, amazing. And how have you, I'm assuming you all started rehearsals.
We sure have,
So what is the feel been for the...
we're still very much in the early stages, but I... of course, had to let my students know right away the subject matter.
Of course,
why right. this piece right. is the way it is.
Right. Right.
Because she's right, it's not her typical piece. You know, right. my students at this point have grown accustomed a little bit to what to
right.
expect from
yes,
a
yes,
Clarissa
yes.
de la Garza piece, right? Yes, right? Yes. And this is not that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I kind of had to explain, mm-hmm. keeping in mind the theme and,
right.
and where this is coming from
right.
and sharing
right.
the poetry
yes,
with them.
Of course. Right.
And I think immediately they sensed the power in the moment.
Right, right.
Because it's
right.
a pretty powerful piece.
It's very powerful.
And
yeah.
I think when, you know, we're musicians, we understand that we have powerful moments like this,
yes.
that this is another groundbreaking mm-hmm. occasion for us,
yeah.
and that
yeah.
we are doing something special that's not just putting on a little concert here.
Right, right, right.
And I think
right.
they bought into it right mm-hmm. away mm-hmm. for that reason. Mm-hmm. And I think they understood the seriousness of it,
yeah.
the
yeah.
impact that this could take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the coolest things mm-hmm. about this mm-hmm. experience, this mm-hmm. piece, this premiere that we're gonna do is, there are not clarinet choir pieces like this. You
right,
know?
Right,
she,
right, right.
She mentioned in her last, mm-hmm. In your guys' last
right,
interview
uh-huh.
put together that, you know, most of what we play are transcriptions of band mm-hmm, pieces and mm-hmm. orchestra pieces, and they're all very fun and they're
yeah,
fast
right.
and exciting. The kids love them. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I do the ensemble, mm-hmm. but we don't have a lot of original music,
yeah.
Certainly, and like no music that takes on serious mm-hmm, themes mm-hmm. delving with this, no music that has live narration, let
right.
alone in native Finnish tongue
yes.
by any means.
Uh-huh.
Very few multi-movement works mm-hmm. and no works that are just like, we can keep saying there's a heaviness to it. There's
yeah.
a seriousness
yeah.
to
yeah.
this piece that
yeah.
you can sense from the
right.
very beginning. I mean,
right.
I remember her
right.
kind of having some maybe concerns, I would say, about like, oh, I don't know if the kids are going to like it. I hope they do because it's you know, it's atonal. There's
right.
a lot of dissonance.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a lot of clash
yeah.
in the
yeah.
sound
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. but
yeah.
I think immediately they bought in. They love Clarissa just as much mm-hmm. as I do. So
right.
they were excited that we were
yeah.
getting another
mm-hmm.
Piece from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are excited to kind of enter into this new chapter in her music too.
Yeah, so. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's so cool and quite incredible. I mean, you're you know, I keep hearing, you mentioned this before too, that there's just not a lot of, in a way, the clarinet choir, the clarinet ensemble hasn't been utilized in a sense as an expressive tool, or if you will, or ensemble as much, except for the transcriptions. And what a wide world you have in front of you. I think what an incredible experience it's gonna be at this Clarinet Fest, because you're not only, I mean, these are two groundbreaking works and they're quite different. They're quite different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then the other one as well, that the Cedar Park High School mm-hmm. from Cedar Park Austin is going to play. Say a little bit about that one, if you would. Give us a little bit of history on that particular piece. That particular one. So before we wrap up.
In
yeah.
Song and Spirit?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's like a culture fusion, like Middle Eastern / Eastern European, Yiddish, klezmer, Arabic dance.
Oh, is that all? Okay.
Yeah, it's just meant to be this fun, jubilant kind of
okay,
dance.
Okay, well that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's what a perfect triangle of the different areas you're exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And I this is going to be huge for you. This is going to be huge. I mean, wow.
I'm
congratulations.
Excited.
You should
you.
Be excited. And thank you so much for commissioning her and supporting her so much. You know, it's got to be like really amazing to collaborate with Clarissa and
mm-hmm.
all that she's doing. And but she needs you. We need you. We need performers. We need
sure.
supporters, right? People that are putting together the clarinet choirs and preparing all that. And I know she's very grateful to you. And as a listener and an audience member, I'm grateful to you because you're part of bringing these things to light. Anything else before we wrap up, y'all want to mention anything else coming up?
No, I'm also really excited to
mm-hmm.
showcase her music.
Mm-hmm.
I find her voice an important one
yes.
to elevate
yes.
In our society and in the small clarinet world
mm-hmm.
as well. And I'm really looking forward to working with her in the future here as we get ready for these premieres and maybe even beyond.
So we'll see how it goes.
I'll do a shameless plug real quick.
Our UTSA Clarinet Choir is
fundraising right now to get some money to help us travel up to Dallas for these, Fort Worth actually, for these premieres. And so maybe we'll link that fundraiser in the podcast. But if you end up checking this out and can send us a little money our way, we'd appreciate it. Thanks so much.
They need people actually have to get there.
Yes,
and they have
to
eat and they have to have food and drinks and everything like this.
And it's not a very small group, at least 20 kids. You know, I say kids, they're all adults, but
right. Awesome. Anything else you want to mention? Anything else coming up?
I'm just super grateful for the opportunity. I mean, UTSA has been super supportive, and even my undergrad at UTRGV, they were also super supportive. And I think that's like one of the only ways I could have got my foot through the door was through these ensembles.
Yeah, well,
it's really hard to make it out there.
It is hard. It is hard to make it out there. It is, and being, I mean, I would not put you in the older composer group, at this time in your life. And you've got a long journey, and great one ahead of you. And you're doing incredibly well. And I congratulate you. And I'm thrilled to see what's coming next from you. And this is one of these things, is these upcoming performances. So thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you for being here again. Thank you for joining us for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you both on. Thank you also for joining us. And for now, this is Ken Thompson at Maxa Musical Arts Center of San Antonio, wishing you well on your journey.